Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
Have you ever seen, like, were you into the original? Like, did you ever watch The Running Man?
Yeah, I feel like it was on TBS a lot, and or like TNT. I don't know. I feel like those, it was on there, and I would watch bits and pieces of it, but I don't know if I've ever watched it all the way through.
I don't think I've ever seen. I feel like the one that I always saw growing up was Total Recall.
Oh yeah, Total Recall. Yeah.
I watched Total Recall on TV a bunch as a kid. I just think I missed Running Man. Like I think I never saw the Arnie one.
A lot of his movies kind of blend together, and this one and Total Recall seemed very, very similar with the whole tone. And like, there's actually a really interesting story behind this whole thing, because they had like three different directors, and they had a director on and they fired him, and then they brought in another guy, and Arnold wasn't very happy about it. But it turned out it's a pretty big cult classic.
Yeah.
And from what I saw, I liked it. And I think it is actually, this is all based on Stephen King's novel The Running Man, right? And it's pretty amazing what Stephen King could see in reality television. You know, I mean, it was written in like late 70s or early 80s, I can't remember. But
well, it's interesting that this year we got adaptations of The Long Walk and The Running Man, and they're both thematically very similar films.
Yes.
Tonally very different. Very different tone.
Yes.
But they're both sort of set in dystopic kind of alternate realities, one in kind of an alternate future and one in like an alternate 1950s or 60s society. Something like that.
Yeah.
But both are sort of commentaries on the cruelty of The Running Man, especially, is a commentary, is a kind of a satire. At least the film version is a satirical send up of like late stage capitalism and just kind of the indifference of the meat grinder of capitalism. And
and all the, you know, the spectacle of media,
right?
And making it, you know, I mean, both The Long Walk and The Running Man are both broadcast, where people are just like, we care more about the entertainment of our people than we do about our people themselves.
Right.
If you get caught in the crossfire, sorry for you. Like, this is all just, we've got to keep the people entertained.
And there's this kind of 1984-esque thing of just sort of like everyone, the media, the entertainment threatens the populace too, because it's like, you're entertained today, but tomorrow you could be the one on the show.
Yeah.
You could be the one in the hot seat, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if you saw this one, but on the one of the Wonder Funners, I said that, I was wondering if The Long Walk could have evolved into The Running Man. Like, so the Long Walk is like, it's going on, it's being broadcast, but at a certain point they're losing. So like, well, how do we change this? You know, and it evolves, and ultimately maybe it became The Running Man. And I kind of like that, you know, I mean, whether you believe that or not, I don't, who cares? You know?
One guy got
really mad at it, but I thought,
oh, really?
he didn't like it, but I'm like, okay, I just thought it was a fun idea that like, oh, maybe this thing could have evolved into this other thing. You know, I mean, you gotta keep one-upping yourselves in media. So you have Survivor, and then you have Survivor this,
right?
Survivor that. And like, you have these offshoots. So it just kind of felt natural that that's what this competition of The Long Walk would become.
Yeah. And like, I don't know if that's what Stephen King intended,
but
I doubt it, but I like, I think it's a fun fan theory.
Yeah.
I think it's
Yeah. And that's exactly what I was thinking of it as too. Like, oh, this is just kind of cool. Like, oh, they're connected. And Stephen King does like to connect his books.
Yeah.
I mean, he had the whole Dark Tower is that, you know, thing, but I just thought that was an interesting thing to, not that it matters either way to either one of the movies, but I think it is interesting to see that like, you've got to one up yourself in media, and you keep making these offshoots and going higher and higher and harder and harder. And like, that just seems to be the natural evolution of this long walk. So
yeah,
anyway,
Obviously, today we are talking about The Running Man that is in theaters right now, directed by Edgar Wright, starring Glenn Powell and others. There's a whole bunch of people in this movie. Mm-hmm. If you don't want a if you want a spoiler-free version of our thoughts, we have those already on the channel. You can go and watch our spoiler-free thoughts. This is going to be a spoiler-filled, more of a deep dive, but probably a shorter episode than you're typically used to. We're not going to do like a full breakdown of the plot. We're just going to talk about certain aspects, but there will be spoilers, so be advised. The Running Man is the gist of it. The concept is it's a story of in an alternate future, there is a TV show called The Running Man, and this is sort of a society that has a bunch of different game shows that are all produced by this one network where people compete for money, but if you lose, you die. Like in several of these games.
Yeah. You die, but apparently your family still gets the money, I think was kind of the,
At least the network says so. But, you know, obvious, it's like, who would trust this network? But I guess if you're in a world where you have no choice, our main character, when we meet him, Glenn Powell, we like his one defining characteristic is that he's got a temper. Which I also I found this weird that like the thing that gets him cast on The Running Man eventually is Josh Brolin's he does all these tests and people are the people at the network that test you for the shows are like, you are by far the angriest contestant we've ever. And I was like, in this world, no one like you've never seen another angry person before. The world of this movie reminded me a lot of Mike Judge's Idiocracy, where it just seemed like it seemed like everyone in the movie was just really stupid, except for Glenn Powell and his wife. It seemed like they're like the only people in the world who get how messed up everything is, and everyone else is just like, you know, like, I don't know why there hasn't been a revolution in the society, you know?
I wondered that as well. It is kind of like a, and I also, I really loved what you said on your first thoughts of like, I love Glenn Powell. I think he's awesome. I think he's a great actor. I think he could be one of his next action stars, but I do feel like he was super one note in this movie. And just like, I felt the same way, like, okay, he's angry, but like, why is that? I didn't get the connection between the anger and everybody rooting for him, because like, I get if you're angry, you can be angry at the bad people, but he's angry at everybody.
Right.
And it's kind of like, well, why you've got to have more of an endearing characteristic to the people that you should not be angry at. You know,
yeah,
like it's kind of weird. It was a weird, I didn't really get the character.
Well, and then it begs the question too, is like, is it a flaw in the performance that it's one note, or is it a flaw in the writing and the directing? I kind of lean towards the latter. Like, I just don't think the character was given much else to do other than be mad and rage. In fact, like, was the vein in his forehead real?
Or that's what I was wondering too. I don't know.
He has this vein in his forehead that is like, it's, like, I couldn't stop looking at it.
I couldn't either.
And I kept being like, is that makeup? Is it something they added in post? Or is that, does Glenn Powell have that vein in his forehead? And I didn't finish saying the kind of the summary of the story. So there's this network that produces all of these deadly TV shows, and their deadliest show is called The Running Man. But it's also the show that if you win it, you get the most money. And there's all this, like, you know, it's like all this futuristic kind of new world speak where they have their money's called new dollars, and the TV that they watch is called freebie, because I think the network pays for the cost of the TV through advertising and stuff, you know? And so it's like the gift that the network is giving the people is freebie. Even though you still got to watch all the ads, and the network owns everything. They're a major, you know, conglomerate that kind of runs all of the media in this world. But The Running Man is a show where if you can outrun a group of hunters and also society for 30 days, you win $1 billion, which is still apparently a lot of money in this futuristic society. And every week that you survive in this game, you get like $65,000, we do get a good idea of like the scale of money in this world. And it does seem like for most people, even a couple hundred new dollars is a lot. goes a long way. So $65,000 is like, that's nothing to sneeze at in this world. And $1 billion is still definitely like, it's an amazing prize. And Glenn Powell obviously when we meet him, he's just getting fired from a job. He's got a daughter who's dying of cancer or sickness.
Yeah, she's got something. Yeah.
Some kind of infection in her lungs or something. And his wife works as a waitress at a restaurant, which in this world is sort of understood to mean that she might be doing some kind of, sex
some
work
sort of, or yeah. Gentleman's yeah. club or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, they're people on the bottom rung of society who have very few options. And he decides, in order to save my daughter's life, I'm going to go and try out for the shows at the network, but he doesn't want to do the Running Man. He'll do any of the other shows, but not the Running Man. And obviously he gets picked to be the Running Man because, first of all, he's jacked beyond belief. He's so shredded in this movie.
Oh yeah. Well, it's so funny because I think it might have been. Oh my gosh, why am I blanking on the director's name? Edgar Wright. I think Edgar Wright was like, "Oh, I just love Glenn Powell because he's such an everyman." And I'm like, "What? He's not an everyman. He's like way jacked. He's way handsome." Not every guy looks like that. He's totally a movie star. Like, he's not in no world is he an everyman.
Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, and it's basically, obviously our main character, there wouldn't be a movie if he wasn't going to be the guy that,
there's three
contestants on the show that basically every time they do this, like, one of them, the network likes to pick three different kinds of runners. One is sort of like a buffoon who doesn't really realize the stakes of the show. And this is Martin, whatever his name is from, Please Don't Destroy, SNL. And he was pretty funny in the movie. He was all right. Yeah. And then, the second person is, what's her name? Katie.
She's not here on the Katie. I always forget her name, but she's a good,
she's great.
Katie O'Brien,
who does a nice enough job in this movie. And then then there's always like the third guy who's like the one who goes the distance, or the longest. And usually that person lasts about 2 weeks on average on this show. But obviously our main character makes it, he goes all the way. And finds out along the way that like the network isn't playing fair because of course they're not. And they're doing a lot of interesting things. There's like, I think the social satire of this film, which is quite dark, for the most part works well enough and has enough to say that I like the usage of like kind of just like deep fake AI technology that they're bringing into this
they used in the 87 Schwarzenegger movie as well. They have stuff, they manipulate things to make it look like something else, which
that's pretty crazy that they called that.
I know they did. It was very interesting.
It's actually crazy that like Stephen King wrote a book where in the future there's a TV show where like as part of the Running Man, like part one of the rules on the show is that you have to film yourself for 10 minutes every day and then mail in the footage of yourself so that like it basically keeps you like on the map. Like it keeps you like, you have to be near a mailbox. Like you have to be somewhere where you can mail in your footage. You can't like, basically it makes it so that you can't, like
go underground, go into
the mountains and hide in a cave for 30 days, like you've got to be somewhere where you can mail in your footage every day. And, but what Glenn Powell's character starts doing is he starts trying to tell the audience about all of the dishonest and manipulative things that the network is doing. And then he finds out, the network actually alters the footage to make it look like I'm saying things that I didn't say. Mm-hmm. And they can do it like on the fly too. And it basically is like, well, we live in that society now. So that's
right.
Crazy. Yeah. It's hard not to find some of the commentary here a little cynical, because again, it's like I was sitting here going like, I think in this world, Glenn Powell wouldn't be the only person who's as angry as he is. I think there, but we do see there's a little bit of an underground movement.
Yeah.
There's people who are organizing to push, you know, who don't trust the network, and Glenn Powell throughout the movie gets helped out by some of these people. And, for the most part, this movie was entertaining for me. It was gripping. The action set pieces were cool. One thing that really bothered me in this movie, and it was kind of from this point forward that I thought the wheels started falling off.
I wonder if it's the same point as
is when we got to Michael Cera.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Glenn Powell meets a guy earlier in the movie who basically points him in the direction of a radical who lives in this house out in the country, who's going to help him out. And this guy, these are guys that know how the game show works. They know how to like game the system. And Michael Cera is like this radical who prints his own magazines, and he's this revolutionary who, his dad was killed by the goons, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so he's got it out for like the upper crust. And they've got a pretty good plan of like how to beat the system. They're going to pre-tape all of his tapes, which I also was like, I can't believe that's even an option. I can't believe there isn't tech that like time stamps when you film, you know, like that seems like a really big plot hole, but they're going to do this. They're going to pre-tape all of his tapes. And then Michael Cera is going to go around and drop the tapes off in different mailboxes to throw the hunters off of his scent. And he's going to go hide out in a bunker that Michael Cera's dad built. And they're going to like, and I just was like, this plan seems like it will work. And the only reason it doesn't is because Michael Cera and his mom, well, first his mom does a thing that like, is really annoying, but then Michael Cera like just decides to just like say like, screw it.
Yeah. She's going to push a buzzer, which apparently every house has.
Yeah.
And she's going to tell the authorities that, oh, he's here. Ben Richards is here. And Michael Cera stops her. And then he ultimately decides, because he's crazy, that he's going to push the button so that he can kill a bunch of these goons, which I agree. I was kind of like, why did you do that? Like, why didn't you just have the mom do it? And he wasn't there, but then he's excited and he's like, no, this is okay. This will be okay. And like, that was kind of the point where it really didn't work.
I just don't like when movies just have characters do something that I don't think they would do. But the movie's like, well, we need to have them do this so that things fall apart. And it just is like character acts stupid so that plan can work, you know, and the plot, but it's like, I like the plan that they were going to do, I think would have worked. And obviously you don't have a movie without that, but it's like, can you come up with a more clever way in the screenplay to have the plan fall apart than Michael Cera, who came up with the plan, just decides to sabotage it? Like, that, and they wanted that scene to be kind of fun, and I just was annoyed. And then from that point forward, the movie was just doing things that in my brain, I just was like, I don't get any of this. Like, there was so much plot armor on Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
I didn't get why so many times the hunters didn't just kill him. I know that they had set up that like, if the network's getting good ratings, they're going to try to stretch it out. But also there were several times where I was like, I think this is it. I think you just kill him here. And they would just be like, no, let's not. Let's just like let him keep going, you know?
And yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it was really strange because right after this, you know, right after Michael Cera, I was with the movie the entire time. Even with Michael Cera, I was like, okay, that was dumb. But at least the sequence is fun.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, that made no sense to me that he would do that, but I forgave it because I still had a lot of fun with it. But once he gets off, like right after this, he goes to a house and he's thinking about his daughter and his wife. And it was kind of a weird scene. And then he gets in the car with Amelia Jones, I think is her name, from Coda.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it all fell apart for me because I get it. Because he gets in the car with this rich girl and he kind of opens her eyes to like the oppression that's happening. And she's so rich that like she doesn't see it. And like, I get what you're saying and I agree with what you're saying in this movie, but then it just became way too heavy-handed. And instead of having fun, they started trying to like push the message a little bit more. And I was like, if you would have kept going crazy, if you would have kept doing crazy stuff, and you would have kind of kept this satire of like, oh, this is funny, but like we're, you know, kind of more tongue-in-cheek type way, I think the message hits harder than when you just start preaching, because at this point it started to become preachy. And anytime when you preach, even if you agree with what they're preaching, it just becomes a little bit harder to grasp for most people. And this was kind of like, okay, you're just becoming preachy a little bit here. And I think it would be better if the third act was way more fun.
Yeah.
Because it just became a little too self-serious, and I wanted it to be more fun. I wanted it to be more crazy. And it really wasn't. Like the third act of this movie, which is the plane scene that we see in the trailers, the trailers made it look awesome, which it was really cool, but it also was just, it was so serious that I didn't have any fun with it.
Right.
And I really wanted to have fun with it. I wanted to have more fun with that, but it just wasn't really there. So that was really when it lost me as well. So it was about pretty much in the same spot that we kind of got lost, which is what I'm hearing from a lot of people too. Like,
well, and then the end of that sequence is that, well, in that sequence in the plane, our main villain, which is Josh Brolin, he's the head of the network. He offers, like, a big twist is that he talks to Glenn Powell and he offers him his own show. He goes, you've done so good. Like, the rate, people love you so much. What if we gave you your own show? And it was like, he goes, so I'm going to have you kill all of the hunters on that plane with you. And then you're going to be the lone hunter. And we're going to have you get, we're going to, you know, the network is authorizing me to give you like $7 million a season for your own show. And what we find out is that the main hunter that's been hunting him the entire movie, he was the guy from the first season of The Running Man who went the distance, 29 days. And he was offered the same deal by the network and he became a hunter. And the network did all kinds of horrible things to his family and all this stuff to like basically break him down and just make him this like murderer, which I thought was interesting. I thought that was interesting.
Yes.
But the way that this all like plays out is Josh Brolin gives him kind of the plane is on autopilot and it's on a collision course. It's going to crash. And Glenn Powell wants to fly the plane into the network building, into like Josh Brolin's office and kill him. But they're controlling the plane with autopilot and all of the parachutes have been used and like there's no escape route. And Josh Brolin gives him one last chance. He's like, take the deal and I'll make sure you get out of there safely. Glenn Powell doesn't take the deal and he goes, all right, have it your way. And they crash the plane. And then we just sort of fast forward to like later. And it's just like Glenn Powell's alive and he's still leading this revolution. And the movie doesn't bother explaining how that happened.
Well, the one guy comes on who's a part of the resistance, right? And you have a video and he's like, oh, there was a little pod that you can see right here.
Yeah.
But
even when I saw that, I was like, okay.
That's what I thought too. Like,
yeah,
this is the thing. I love Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
I think he's an amazing filmmaker. I think he's extremely talented. He has a problem with endings. And I think even in some of his movies that like, it's even the ones that he kind of hits, like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, I think is ended well, but he almost ended the movie completely differently.
The shot was two completely different endings. Yeah,
they did. And it tested poorly his original ending. So then they shot it the way that it's is in the comic and it worked out better. But like, I'm thinking about The World's End and I hated the ending of that movie. And it was very similar to this. And there's a few other movies, even Shaun of the Dead. It's kind of like, okay, the ending is okay. But it's just, it's kind of, sometimes it's unsatisfying, and Baby Driver is that way too. Even though I love all these movies, I think they're amazing, but like he sometimes doesn't land.
I think Edgar Wright films start strong.
Like, absolutely.
Like they have like a really strong, like first two thirds usually, you know, and like Scott Pilgrim is probably my favorite Edgar Wright film personally.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And it feels the most maybe complete. And Shaun of the Dead is in there too.
Yeah.
But I talked about this in my spoiler free thing, but I actually felt like I could feel the presence of Edgar Wright as the director of this film.
Yeah.
In a distracting way. I felt like he was adding all of these Edgar Wright isms to the edit of the film that didn't need to be there. They were just there to remind me that Edgar Wright was the director.
Yeah.
And that, like, if it's not serving, like in Scott Pilgrim, when we're doing the, like, the camera wipes and the, or in a lot of his movies, he finds a way to make his style work for the narrative. In mm-hmm. this movie, they were doing all of these, you know, like the transitions that he likes to do, and these kind of, you know, someone walks past, they wipe the sound effects and things like that, all the quirkiness of his directorial and editorial style. In this movie, it just felt like it, I don't think this movie needed it. And it just felt like it was added in there just to be like, well, I mean, if Edgar Wright's directing, we might as well, right? We might as well just, and for me at least, it kind of pulled me out a little bit because it just kept reminding me, like, this is an Edgar Wright film, and I was like,
Well, I agree. I see what you're talking about. I wish they would have either taken it out or they would have gone more,
right?
Because I feel like the movie did, it was in this weird in between where, like, listen, if you're gonna, if you like, I love Edgar Wright and I love how fast he edits and I love how he edits to his music and has more of that. Like, if you have more of that, I almost would be with it more because you're saying, this is my style. This is Edgar Wright's style. I'm going to do it. But he kind of went in between where, like, well, I'm going to do the Stephen King book, but you're going to have these little hints of me throughout it. And I'm like, no, give me all of it. Like,
just I agree.
Go for it.
I think it's either you got to fully do it and go and make it because it shows up randomly.
And
you'll kind of like forget that it's a device in the film, and then it'll happen again, and you're like, oh yeah, that's right. And so it's like, either make it the entire film and just really commit to that style, or just be willing to just be a kind of a hired gun for this adaptation of a, you know, a remake, and maybe you don't need to insert your personal brand as much, and that was another thing. It's like, I was enjoying this movie well enough for the first probably 45 minutes to an hour. There were still things in there where, you know, it's like when he's hanging out in the hotel and he was like looking out the window at everybody, I was like, buddy, stop. Like, like,
get away from the window.
Yeah. There's just things that character, like, that he would also, I completely forgot about this. This is, to me, probably the biggest and most glaring and obvious plot hole of this movie, and I'm assuming the original as well. They make such a point about the fact that, like, the TVs in this world have cameras that are watching you. And that, like, the TVs that you watch are part of a surveillance network that watches you. And it's, like, known that, like, part of what makes your TV free is that you agree to be observed by the network. And there were so many scenes where Glenn Powell was on the run, hiding out in a hotel room, watching Free V.
Yeah.
And I was like, is the TV not seeing him? Like, wouldn't whatever survey, like, wouldn't they have in this world facial recognition software that would immediately go off when he is spotted in a hotel? And like, I just was kind of like, why even have a plot point where, like, I would think that what we would see in this film is every time Glenn Powell checks into a hotel, the first thing he does is, like, throws a towel over the TV, you know, like, hides the sensors and, like, closes the windows and, like, really tries to stay hidden. But he would, like, he's watching TV, knowing that there's a camera watching him. He's standing in open windows, looking at people, waving it. I was like, I just didn't, I, you know,
I know, but I agree. I thought it was, I think a bigger problem with this as well is that this movie was too long and that the pacing was a little off. Like we talked about, the tone is kind of off where they go into satire, but then they get a little too serious and then they kind of bounce around. But I think also the pacing of this movie, like, he spends too much time. Like, they wanted to make it a road movie. He was trying to be more faithful to the book, which is fine. But it just kind of, like, when he got to the hotel, it just started to drag until it finally got to the point where they had that really cool one-er where he's, you know, he's got to get away from the hunters, and then he goes up and then he comes down, and then they have the one-er where he's running through the halls and they're shooting at him and he slides under the elevator. And
yeah,
that was fun stuff, but it just kind of took too long to get from action scene to action scene when the pacing should be kind of pushed up, you know, and it should, maybe he runs into more people that, and has funny interactions. So it doesn't have to be action all the time, but you kind of need to, he just kind of gets alone with himself, and then you've got to find a way to like have that be interesting while he's talking to himself or figuring things out, you know.
I think that you might be right actually about the, like, we should just go more with the Edgar Wrightisms. Think that the confused tone of this film, where it's like sometimes it's like a slapstick comedy, mm-hmm. And that's what made me think more of like Idiocracy.
Yeah.
And sometimes it really is taking itself quite seriously. And I kind of was like, I think that you need to just go full on Scott Pilgrim with this and mm-hmm. just let it be heightened. Let the whole thing just be, you know, and just let it be fun. And I felt like the film couldn't decide if it wanted to commit to that or not. And, you know, I think one way or another, like, you either need to commit to being more serious, like The Long Walk, but this is such a ridiculous world that I think it would ultimately serve the story better to just like commit to the fun of it and just let the movie is fun. It does have fun sequences. It's just that the tone is up and down and a little uneven. One aspect of this film that's really, really fun that we haven't talked about yet is Colman Domingo's performance.
Oh, love it.
And I think you made a point in your spoiler-free thing that, like, the movie probably, they do this in the original where the president of the network is also the host of the show. And I think that we didn't need Josh Brolin and Colman Domingo to be two different. Josh Brolin's great. And he does I liked his fake teeth that he was wearing.
Oh, I loved it too. I thought he was great and what he had. Yeah.
But I think that Colman Domingo is such a like presence in this film and so energetic and it feels like kind of a waste to just have him be the host of the show. And then also I felt like he kind of got off easy. Like I felt like, like the show treats him like he's like it's totally fine that he gets to walk away consequence free. And I'm like, he's part of the, like, he's part of the evil network. Like he should. Yeah. And he is a bad guy. He is he's antagonistic throughout the action of the film. Yeah. And I think that the movie was like, but come on, he's cool. And like, so they just let him go at the end. Yeah. But I'm like, I think you're right that he would have made he's so good in the movie and he's such a good actor. Mm-hmm. I think he would have made a much more compelling just main villain.
I think that would have been much more interesting, you know. It would have made it more The other thing that I thought that they did in the original movie or in the 1987 movie, the hunters, they didn't really have hunters. I don't think they called them that. Maybe they did. I can't remember, it's been so long. But the hunters in that movie are like really over the top. Like one guy shoots electricity out of his hands and like sings opera while he's doing it, you know, and like just like kind of these crazy over the top costumed villains in a sense. And I feel like that would have been a lot more fun as well in this movie, because the hunters, like, besides the main hunter who's played by Lee Pace, who just has a mask on, like, they're just kind of guys, you know? Like,
yeah, they don't. Lee Pace's character has the most personality. And you're totally right that it's like they could have all had like a lot more. Uh-huh. You could have had a lot more fun with their personalities. And
Yeah. I agree. And I think, you know, that would have been great. I think the other big problem kind of we touched on is the ending of this movie. Like, he kind of gets away in the pod. And then, like, he sees his wife and his child, and then we go to the end in the network, and Colman Domingo leaves because he's like, oh, see, he won, like we're through. So he just leaves, and then Josh Brolin's like, oh, I'll be the host now, and he goes on, and then Glenn Powell comes back again and burns the place to the ground, and it felt so like so choppy and
it felt
so
forced,
disjointed.
Yeah, because it's also like, how do you get into that building? Like, we've established that it's a really hard building to, you know, there's just so much story that happens off screen.
And it is changed The book, he dies in the book. The character dies and he becomes a martyr, and they didn't want that. But I was like, you made it as if he did die anyway. So like, it was such a weird ending to me that felt so unearned, even though it was set up that way in the first place.
Yeah, because it's also like, I thought that the network wasn't actually going to give his family the money. And then when we see his wife and his kid in the store, it's like, oh, so I mean, she looks like she's wealthy now. But I'm also like, I want to know, like, is the wife doing anything to pay it forward? If she's got $1 billion, is she helping out other people? Is she building a community, the Ben Richards, foundation for, upward mobility? And it's just sort of like the third act is mostly takes place in a car and on a plane. And those scenes aren't nearly as fun as you want them to be. And then we get a really quick wrap up of like, he faked his death and then he comes back and kills Josh Brolin in the end. And it's like, and it's like, okay, fine, whatever.
I guess.
I think it might be more interesting if he's because they talk about how like, he's supposed to be like the light that lights the spark that
and lives or whatever it is. I can't remember what it is. It's a three syllable thing.
Does Schwarzenegger die in the 87?
I don't remember. I want to say no. I don't think he does. He kind of takes him down on live TV or something. And he kind of breaks the whole system. I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, please.
Yeah. Anyway, those are our general, thoughts on The Running Man. It's a fun movie. I would say go see this one in the theater and make up your own mind. It hasn't done terribly well.
Low expectations are always better.
Yes. Let's get into our scores for this. We give scores for a technical rating. That's just everything at the craft level of the film, a score for the ending, a score for rewatchability, a score for cultural significance, and a score for our subjective thoughts on the film. So what is your technical rating for The Running Man 2025?
So my technical rating is a 6. It's a 6.5 because there's a lot of really fun. Two-thirds of this movie, or really three-fourths of this movie, are pretty good. A lot of fun. Action set pieces are really great. And a lot of fun stuff in it. But the ending is really, really bad. It just really kind of falls off. And I think the other thing that really I noticed in this movie, this is the first movie that Edgar Wright shot all on digital. He usually, he's a pretty big proponent of film, like celluloid film. And the plane sequence, like just for logistical reasons, he decided to shoot this all on digital. And the plane sequence, I could totally tell was shot on digital. They didn't do it in a good, like it just looked really, really bad. So I'm docking it some points for that, even though everything else looked pretty good. Like it looked really good. And I loved Colman Domingo. I love some of the performances were really good up until the end, but just, the ending kind of screwed it up.
Yeah. I've got it at a 6.52. There's there's some decent production design and action set pieces and some stuff that had me engaged enough. I think it's a fun enough watch. But there's also just enough things that are kind of frustrating where it's like, this really could be kind of great and like a really, really fun movie. And it was just sort of a little bit frustrating to watch for a lot of the same reasons that you mentioned. How do you feel about the ending?
The ending I gave a 5.5. It just was very unsatisfying. The whole third act really just lost me and it stopped being fun. Yeah. So I was very disappointed. And like we said, it just feels very disjointed. Like he has that whole conversation and then he's dead, but then he's not dead, but then he comes back and he sees Josh. It just didn't work that great for me.
Yeah, they're almost doing so much of the deep fake stuff that by the end you're like, I don't know what's real. I don't know. There's so much of the fake footage stuff that it's like, well, I don't believe anything. I don't believe any of the footage coming out of there. I give the ending a 4 because I did just feel like all of the momentum built up in the first half of the film, none of it really resolved in a way that felt satisfying. Or even the thing, like he says to Josh Brolin at one point, the reason why they do the ending the way they do it is because he says to him earlier in the film, like, I'm gonna mess you up, like,
yeah,
I'm gonna, like, you know, and then he comes back and he shoots him. And I just was like, oh, I kind of was like hoping for a scene where you like beat him up.
Right.
Where
right.
you like, yeah. you know, like, but I, like shooting him is like, I guess that's all right. It just feels
yeah.
like less satisfying than you would want.
Yeah.
So
yep.
yeah, this one just sort of left me feeling like, oh, okay. Yeah. Rewatchability.
Rewatchability, I gave a 6.5 because I do like the beginning of it. You yeah. know, it's like it's a fun movie up for that time, but then the ending really kind of cuts it off. So a little bit higher score for me.
I gave it a 5, and I could see this maybe changing. Like I could like maybe I watch this movie in a year or two and on streaming, and I go, oh, I was too harsh. This movie's actually really fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Because there were a lot of things that I enjoyed. So we'll yeah. see. How about cultural significance and impact?
Cultural impact, I gave a 5 because it's not really doing that much. It's done a lot less. I forgot to talk about this. I don't feel like this movie needed to be rated R. Like I am, if you want to make a rated R movie, okay, that's fine. But like from a business perspective, they spent over $100 million on this movie. Why did you make it rated R? Like it's a fact that PG-13 movies make more than rated R movies because your market is way more open. Like if you're going to make this movie rated R, which is fine, cut the budget by about half or maybe about 60 million. And then you could probably get your money back. If you're going to make a $100 million movie, you got to make it. You should probably make it PG-13 because there wasn't anything in this movie that I felt like, oh yeah, this should, you know, it's not a Quentin Tarantino movie where I'm like, it should be rated R because you'd have to change everything. You'd have to change all of his dialogue and everything. Like, I didn't mind that this movie was rated R, but from the business side of me is like, why did you could have made it PG-13. There's not a ton of violence that's like over the top, but like, I don't know. Anyway, sorry.
I'd say the reason to make it rated R is because of the way that they like to do the violence on the show and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of like really graphic, but I felt like that stuff could have gone further. I felt like, hey, if we're
yes.
here,
yes.
if we're here doing kind of like over the top, funny violence,
yes.
funny, like, then let's go bigger. Like,
yes. And, you know, and do it that way and then cut the budget. Cause right. You're not going to make as much money. So don't give it more money to make it. So I felt but the fact that not as many people are seeing it, it's not as big of a cultural impact. So that's, I don't
sure.
think it's
great. Anyway. Yeah. I've got it at 4 for a cultural impact.
Yeah.
I just kind of think this movie is going to like come and go and not really, I don't think it's going to have much of a life. Personally, I could be wrong. What's your subjective score?
My subjective score is a 6.5. You know, again, a lot of fun with it in a lot of ways, but it just kind of loses it at the end.
Yeah, I have it at a 5.5. Could maybe be convinced into not bumping it up to a 6. I had it at a 6, and I was like, I don't even think I liked it that much. And so I put it back to 5.5 because I just was like, I enjoyed the scenes I enjoy. I was with it, but I think that the aspects of it that sort of frustrated me, like I feel the same way kind of like about Baby Driver. And so there's just like, I feel the latter half of the Edgar Wright career, they're movies that are, like, have sequences that are very engaging, very mm-hmm. entertaining, mm-hmm. and then just have elements that's like, this movie could be really great if you would just clean some of this stuff up. And I don't know where the issue lies. I don't know if it's a writing issue or if it's I don't know. So
yeah. It's hard.
But those are our thoughts. Let us know in the comments what you thought. Did you enjoy it? And I do think go see this one in theaters. And
yeah. Go see it in the theater.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, I don't know when we're going to drop this episode, so we don't have an upcoming film. But
well, I mean, I will probably drop it before Wicked, but the next one we'll do is Wicked, I guess.
Yeah.
If not, then you'll listen to our last episode and you'll figure out what we're gonna see.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Like, share, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff, and we'll see you on the next one. Okay,
bye-bye.